Hey guys, it's Chris, the Natural Progressive. Today, I am very excited to bring back on this channel Derek Jensen. Of course, he's an author, he's an activist, and an eco-philosopher. He has done great works. If you haven't read any of his books, I really highly recommend Endgame and the Myth of Human Supremacy. Those would be fantastic reads to get an idea of who Derek is. This is one of my heroes. I've got to say, like, of all the people I've interviewed, of all the people that I've talked to, of all the people I've read, this is somebody who has inspired me greatly. And I just really am excited to bring to you again, Derek Jensen. Say hi, Derek.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So today is Independence Day. How patriotic are you feeling? And what is patriotism to you?
You know, I really love Daniel Lyon's song. I think it's called My Country. And it's about how when he was young, he was taught how to fold a flag and how he was taught that when bad people come, that he will fight for his country. And you start to think, gosh, this is sort of a patriot type song, until about halfway through, it switches to, I love this land and I love my home and I love this forest. And when bad people come to invade this, I will fight them and I will not be fighting alone because the forest will be fighting with you. And so when I think of patriotism, I don't actually think of countries. That's not what's so important. But what I think of is the real country, the countryside, the land. And of course, that has long since been invaded. And it's time we fought for the land.
Thank you for that. To borrow your phrase, you always say that in your interviews, and I love that. Thank you for that. Yes, that's what I think of, and that's why I call it false patriotism, what they're celebrating right now outside, blowing off all kinds of explosives, polluting the air even more for no reason other than our own entertainment. It kind of makes me sad. It really does. What are they celebrating? You know, it's the destruction of our planet, our country, our natural world. Is that what they're celebrating in the big parade that Trump had? What are your feelings on that? We're going to get into the other stuff about the Green New Deal and dive deep into that. But for now, just because it's Independence Day, I just want your opinion on that.
Oh, well, my opinion on fireworks, etc., is I hate them. And I don't really like loud noises myself. And I mainly hate them because they terrify animals.
Yeah. I mean, let alone my dogs, but the animals, the wild animals and everything that have no control, don't know what's going on. It has to be terrifying for them as well. When I'm seeing my dogs huddled at my feet, scared to death.
Especially when, I mean, non-humans aren't stupid, and they can recognize that gunshots go along with hunting, and hunting in this case involves them getting shot. And so yeah, it would be terrifying. Another thing I think about is sometimes when, you know, I hear all these bombs, there we go. When I hear the fireworks going off, I think about what it would be like to live in an honest-to-goodness war zone. And when you're hearing those sounds, it's not something entertaining and fun, but instead, this is actually somebody's house getting blown up.
Yeah, and that's happening. That's happening, like, right now, right? In several places around the world, that's happening right now. That's what they're... it's destruction that they're hearing. It's death that they're hearing with those booms. And we're celebrating that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to be sort of your standard environmentalist killjoy. And if we were talking about, I don't know, if we were talking about Halloween, I could talk about how candy tastes okay or something. But July 4th has never been a big one for me. It's something I've never been very thrilled about. I don't really care. I don't care except for the fireworks, and those actively annoy me.
Yeah. I mean, when you see the animals suffering, it's easy. I mean, when we first moved out to where we're at right now, the fireworks used to shoot off right above where our horses are. And there was a barbed wire fence. And I remember we spent that whole entire night keeping the horses away from the barbed wire fence. We had all my kids and me and my husband like chasing the horses away from the barbed wire fence because they were going off right above our house. The horses were terrified. They thought they were going to die, you know, and no way to escape it. So yeah, that was my turning point as far as fireworks go. So it was not a fun situation. Anyway, so let's get off of Independence Day because honestly, there really isn't much to celebrate at this moment. I don't feel very patriotic towards our government, towards our situation.
Here's an interesting thing. I think patriotism, now instead of just complaining, I'll finally get to some analysis. But I think patriotism is a toxic mimic of something very real, which is I think we have an innate, instinctual, and necessary urge to be part of something larger than ourselves. Humans are social creatures. And even if we weren't social creatures, wolverines, I believe, that similar urge to be part of their larger land base. And it's not simply that they have the urge, but they are a part of the larger land base. Mm-hmm. Likewise, we have a foundational need to be part of a larger community. And capitalism has pretty much destroyed all of our communities. That's one of the things it does. But we still have a toxic mimic of something is something that takes the form and perverts the content. So a really straightforward example would be that rape takes the form of sex or making love and completely changes the actual content and turns into something completely toxic. And we have this desire and need to be part of a larger community, but since capitalism has destroyed our communities, that loyalty has been taken away from the real communities that people have had throughout human existence and throughout social creature existence, and then attached it to these larger entities that don't serve us well. And so you can get people who will die for their country, and that's an extraordinary thing. And that takes this very important, necessary, life-affirming willingness to give one's life for one's community, which I'm not going to ask you to do this, but I'm guessing that if necessary, you would give your life for your children, you know?
Absolutely, yes.
This takes that necessary thing, that necessary impulse, and uses it in a way that does not serve us. Am I being clear at all?
Yeah. I think I get your point. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, honestly, and I like sports. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing sports here, but I think the same thing happens with we put our loyalty to the Denver Broncos or the you know, Seattle Seahawks or whomever or whatever. And that's a fine thing, but it's been part of this same disconnection from what is close to us and what is real. And we should be fighting for our communities, and that includes our non-human communities. That's where our loyalty should lie. And at some point, and God, we could talk about this easily, but that functionally and systematically, the system has inserted itself between us and our loyalties to community and to the natural world, and gotten us to make it so that we identify more with the government than we do. You know, I used to do these talks where I would ask people, do you believe the government takes better care of human beings or corporations? And not a single person out of tens of thousands ever in over the years ever said that they think the government takes better care of human beings than it does corporations. Everybody knows it takes better care of corporations. But at the same time, then we all will talk about the government as we. Who's going to be our president? Who's going to be, you know, how much longer do you think that we're going to be in Iraq? Like, we're in Iraq? I thought we were in Northern California.
I love that.
We're going to have troops in Iraq. It's like, I got troops? Holy crap, I didn't know I have troops. If I tell them take out the Grand Coulee Dam, will they do it? And so there's a, on every level, we've been co-opted into identifying with this government as opposed to...
Like it's a part of us. Like it's an extension of us. I mean, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Like one time, this is pretty funny. Several years ago, maybe, yeah, 6 or 7 years ago, there was some TV show about the United States torture program. And my mom looked at me and she said, you know, it's just terrible that we torture. And I looked at her and I said, Mom, you torture? That's horrible. And she looked at me and she said, I'm 83 years old and I'm your mother. Don't do this to me.
Oh, God. You're the best sense of humor. That's, yes, but yes.
We torture.
Make a good point. Yes. Yeah, it's like the me and the mouse in my pocket, like kind of scenario, right? When we say we and all that, but yeah, we co-opt the government as part of ourselves. And that's just, it's such an odd thing that we do.
Well, very quickly, part of the reason that we do that is because, well, there's a couple of big things here. One of them is that in any abusive situation, one of the most important things is for the abuser to get the victim to identify more with the perpetrator than with the victim's own self-interest. And that can be rational from the perspective of the victim, because if you have an abusive father, say, it doesn't really matter what the children are feeling. What is important is what the father's feeling, because if the father gets unhappy, that can be very threatening to them. And so they have to identify more with the perpetrator. And that's one of the functions of abuse, is to get the victims to identify more with the perpetrator. So on one level, that's what's going on. And on another level, one of the things that this society has done systematically is, as I said earlier, insert itself between us and the natural world. And so if you ask somebody where their food comes from and where their water comes from, they will say from the grocery store and from the tap. And what that means is that you are dependent for your very life on the system that's killing the planet. And
right.
You defend to the death the system that system, because your life depends on it. If, on the other hand, your food came from the land and your water came from a river, you would defend to the death the land and the river. But the system has inserted itself between us and the ability to live without it, which is
between us and nature. Like, we're so separate from it. We don't see it anymore. It's not part of our lives anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And part of this is that there was this pro-slavery philosopher in 1830s who wrote to his Northern abolitionist buddy and said that there are land ownership conditions in which it's in the capitalist's best interest to own slaves or to not own slaves. And it's pretty straightforward. If there's a lot of land and not many people, then that means that the people will have access to land, which means they have access to food, clothing, and shelter, which means they have access to self-sufficiency, which means that the only way they'll go to work for you is if you at the point of a gun. If, on the other hand, you've got a lot of people and not much land, then the people don't have access to land, which means they don't have access to food, clothing, and shelter, which means they don't have access to self-sufficiency, which means that they'll go to work for you for whatever pittance, and you don't have to actually put a gun on them because they'll die of starvation if they don't work for you.
I think that's a very valid point, and I love it when you bring that up. And the whole idea of how taxes became a thing just to make people have to go to work instead of being self-sufficient.
Absolutely. And so this happens on every level that we end up getting separated. Well, plus there's, of course, all the, pledging allegiance from when you're a child every day. And, you know, I like watching baseball, and I mean, baseball's fine, but it's like, you know, all this, patriotic crap that's going on during it too, that you get the entire audience singing about how great this country is. It's just an extraordinary thing.
Right.
Fine if you want to have a church service, which is devoted to the church of the government, where, you know, you sing hymns to the government. That's fine. But good golly, it's everywhere. You know? You go to a baseball game to watch a baseball game. You don't go there to get indoctrinated into further worship of the government.
Right, yeah. Isn't that crazy how they've totally changed that, like with the anthem and with the military presence at sporting events. They're glorifying war and military service to get you to want to be a part of it. Right?
U.S. military pays for that, by the way. When the football teams wear camouflage outfits on their special military day, they're not doing that for fun. They're doing that because the team's getting paid quite a lot of money by the U.S. government. I mean, those are your tax dollars at work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's totally kind of sick and wrong, because what are most of the wars fought over? It's over resources, which is only going to get worse and worse as the environment is destroyed, as the clean water is destroyed, as the air is destroyed. Yep. It's just going to get worse.
Yep.
Absolutely. Okay. So we already know fossil fuels are an issue, and the solutions that some of the politicians are bringing up is the Green New Deal, which entails entirely changing our infrastructure onto wind, solar, and hydro power. I really want to deep dive into each one of those. I don't know what research you've done. You wrote a book on it, which won't be out for another year, but let's kind of dive into these issues so maybe people can get an idea of why this may not be the best plan, and maybe we can go into something that could possibly be a better plan. But let's just go ahead and start with solar.
Well, let's actually take a step back first.
Okay, sure.
Excuse me. Once upon a time, environmentalism was about protecting wild places and wild beings. But over the decades, environmentalism has undergone the same transformation as happens to so many movements for justice and sanity, which is it's become yet another tool to promote capitalism. And basically, the climate change movement has ultimately less to do with saving the planet than it does with promoting certain sectors of the industrial economy. And I know that that's a pretty bold claim, but let's think about it for a second, that if you, the climate change movement can get 100,000 people marching in the streets of New York or Paris or Washington, D.C., and if you ask them why they're marching, they will say to save the earth. And if you ask them what are their demands, they will say, we want subsidies for the wind and solar industry. And that's an extraordinary coup. I can't think of any other mass movements that, I mean, what has happened is that a lot of the environmental movement, the mainstream environmental, I'm not talking about grassroots environmentalists, But a lot of the mainstream environmental movement has been turned into a de facto lobbying arm of the solar and wind industries. And this is really about competing sectors of the industrial economy. We all know that the capitalist economy relies on subsidies and would collapse immediately without massive subsidies. And this is basically a fight between industrial and solar and coal and oil as to who gets those public monies. And that's what really the Green New Deal, a lot of it is just an attempt to get massive amounts of money for wind, solar, hydro, et cetera. And you could say, well, gosh, that's fine, but we don't care because we want subsidies for something that's going to save the planet. So the question is, will it save the planet?
Right.
Actually, that's not the question they ask. That's the question I ask. But the question they ask is they presume and they pretend that it will run, that wind, solar, et cetera, will run the economy. And the short answer is no. And, you know, we hear all the time that, I just saw this thing yesterday again, Sierra Club was saying that, what state was it? I don't remember which state it was. Just yesterday, they said that some state or another has vowed to go 100% renewable energy by, I don't know, 2050 or something. And, you know, we hear that Munich is going to go 100% renewable energy by 2025, whatever.
Isn't it New York? I don't know. Sandy could answer that. I think it was New York that just declared a climate emergency and all that.
Well, that's fine that they declare. I mean, okay, before I go any further, I have to say, yes, global warming is terrifying. And it's happening. It's very, 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 very bad.
Yeah.
The two problems are one, that wind, solar, et cetera, can't actually run the economy, which is fine from my perspective because I don't want to run the economy. I want to save the planet. And the second is they're actually incredibly harmful to the planet. But let's talk about the economy first. They say that they're going to go 100% renewable energy. That's not actually
true.
I mean, it's just a lie. And one of the reasons it's a lie is because they're confusing electricity and energy. The wind, solar, et cetera, can only generate electricity. They can't run a semi-truck. They can't run an airplane, except through batteries, which we can talk about in a minute. So when they say that Munich is going to go 100%, well, first off, when they say Munich's going to go 100% renewable, they imply that this is wind and solar. First, only 20% of energy usage is electricity. So what they're really saying is that they're going to go 20% because they're not going to replace all the trucks. They're not going to replace all the boilers that's used for heating. So mainly electricity. So 80% of the energy use in Los Angeles, in New York City, it doesn't matter where, is not electricity. And electricity cannot be stored. It has to be used as it is. And so this makes a big problem right away. So one of the advantages of oil or coal to run an industrial economy is that you can get a barrel of oil and then you can just have it sit there until you need it. And then you can burn it and it's reliable. On the other hand, wind and solar only work when the sun is shining or the wind's blowing, other way around. And so what do you do? How do you run a ventilator in a hospital at night when the wind isn't blowing?
Batteries. And then you'll explain the problem with batteries.
Yeah. So there's a problem. Yeah. Okay. So first off, wind, solar, et cetera, they simply can't replace. I'm going to get some actual numbers here. Hold on. But well, let's back up a second.
So okay.
When they talk about Munich, et cetera, going 100% renewable, first off, what they mean is renewable electricity instead of energy. I already said that. But the other thing that they don't say is that the largest form of renewable energy by far in Germany, which is one of the miracles they talk about, and this is true all over, is biomass. And what biomass means is cutting down forests and burning them.
Right.
Or growing crops like ethanol, growing corn.
Yeah, for fuel. Yeah.
Those are actually way, way larger percentage. So right now, for green energy, they are deforesting the American Southeast, turning it into pellets, sending it to the UK where it's burned. And that is this renewable energy miracle that they're talking about. Wind and solar are, I'll give you the exact numbers that is in Germany with their miracle. Okay, so primary energy consumption in Germany, wind is about 1.4% of total, solar is about 0.8%, hydro is 0.5%, not 5%, 0.5%. Renewables total in Germany were about 11.5%.
But some of those renewables also require fossil fuels in order to.
Well, that's the next step. This is all. They act like solar panels grow on trees, but panels require mining for the rare earths, for the silicon, for
cobalt, copper,
and they require the transportation system. There's another thing. How are you going to do global transportation with batteries? You can't. Or even with trucks. I mean, look around right now. I mean, seriously, look around, and I will too. What that you see right now was not ever carried by a truck.
Nothing. I worked in a warehouse for a short period of time. I know everything we use, everything we need is carried by a truck. We're transporting way too much. And I push that on my show a lot about living local.
Like, exactly.
That's one of the best things you could possibly do. Grow your food locally. Exactly. and not transport anything. Stop transportation altogether. That's a big thing I push. And thank you so much for saying that.
Well, and that can't be done with solar because the energy density, that's what I'm going to search for and give you some actual numbers. Cause I can just, you know, be saying, oh, this is terrible, but let's do some real numbers.
I think we're bumming a lot of people out right now that just want to believe there's an easy answer.
And, okay.
Yeah.
Gasoline stores about 46 megajoules per kilogram. That's just an amount. It doesn't matter what that actually means. Mm-hmm. The important thing is we're going to compare it. 46 megajoules per kilogram. Right now, lithium batteries have about 1 megajoule per kilogram. And what this means is that you have to have a huge density of them. And I'm going to look up what it is for semis. So diesel fuel has a density of about 48 megajoules per kilogram. As Alice Friedman, who wrote When Trucks Stop Running, Energy in the Future of Transportation, said to me, quote, a diesel semi-tractor can haul 60,000 pounds of freight 600 miles before refueling. to get a similar range, that tractor would have to have 55,000 pounds of batteries. Subtract the weight of batteries from the 60,000 pound total capacity, you're left with 5,000 pounds of freight. So is that, I know these are all numbers and people can be sort of number phobic, but is that clear why this is, it will just never work? It's not the energy density of diesel and oil are so high that they're not functionally replaceable for an industrial society.
Right. So what is the answer? It's just living more simply and going back to the old way, but there's too many people on the planet. You know, there's just, I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people are frustrated on here, like I am. I want to find an answer. I want to save the world. But at this point, I'm at a point where all we can do is save the natural world as much as possible. That's where I'm at.
I have a doctor friend who always says that the first step toward proper treatment is correct diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my problems with all of this so-called renewable energy talk, is it's wasting time we don't have on solutions that will not work and that actually harm the planet.
And yep.
Or let's go a different direction and talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. The first step is to recognize that there's a problem. And so the first step is to recognize that there's a problem and that, you know, wind and solar won't work. They require massive mining. You know, we've heard about this guy, Mark Jacobson, who came up with a plan for how you could have the economy powered by just massive wind harvesting installations, solar harvesting installations, lots more dams. And if you actually do the math on it, this would require more mining than all of the mining on the planet for iron for a year and a half. And so he's actually requiring additional mining, which, by the way, cannot be done without fossil fuels. You can't run those mega trucks on batteries. None of that works.
No, you can't. I worked actually on a mining operation for a while too. I'm a jack of all trades. I've done everything. I worked in the salt, this Great Salt Lake. I worked for a while, harvesting salt before I knew what was really going on with everything. And that's what I did. I ran the harvester for the salt. I ran the wash plant to wash the salt. And yeah, there's no way you're going to do that with electricity for one. Not that I want to do that. I want to stop all that. It was destructive. There was all the water they used for that went into this canal and turned into sludge that they said, if you fell into that, you were dead instantly. I mean, that's what we're doing to the planet.
And this
I've seen it firsthand.
And this is what's happening, for example, with rare earths mining for solar, for all of our electronics, that most of that is done near Baotou, China. And that area has been turned into a giant wasteland with a toxic lake that you can see from outer space.
Yeah. And then there's a copper mine that's here in Utah that you can see from outer space, Kennecott Copper. And it's eaten up a whole entire mountain. And yet you want to keep mining for more copper, keep destroying more habitat for other animals while we're adding 250,000 people per day to the planet and destroying 250 species every single day of other life.
Of course, I agree with you. And so we have part of the problem is that we were talking about we earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We collectively are solving for the wrong variable. The variable, I mean, what do all the so-called solutions to global warming have in common? What they all have in common is they take industrial capitalism as a given and the natural world is having to conform to industrial capitalism.
Right.
And that's literally insane in terms of being out of touch with physical reality, because without a natural world, you have no social system whatsoever. So whatever social system we have must be secondary to the health of the natural world. That's the only way to make a sustainable society. And
But it's God. Okay, I just had this conversation with a family member who called me today. And this is why I'm all discombobulated and probably not on my best game at the moment. I was told that it's all in God's plan. And this was predicted to happen in the Bible, and it's happening exactly the way the Bible intended. So if you have people that are believing in that kind of a scenario, how on earth are you going to get anyone to understand that the natural world is important?
That's why I wrote Endgame, because before I wrote Endgame, I would ask people at talks, do you believe that we will undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living? Nobody ever said yes.
Right.
So if you don't believe that we're going to undergo a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living, and you care about the natural world, what does it mean for your strategy and for your tactics? And my point is that if somebody thinks that this is God's plan, and they think that if they attempt to suggest that what is happening is okay, they're actually not going to be on my side.
Right.
And I'm not slamming. You said that was a relative?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not slamming that relative of yours, because I got relatives just like that too.
Yeah. I wanted to know about that too. That's one thing I really wanted you to talk about. How do you deal with that? Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, a question that I have gotten a lot at talks, and this surprised me. I never would have expected to get this question, but I've gotten a ton, is what do you talk about at Thanksgiving with family and football? Like,
stupid stuff. The weather, right?
The weather. You know, I'm not going to fight that with people. Okay, here's something that happened that I did 30 years ago that really taught me a lesson. I went to some sort of Forest Service meet and greet, and where they're rationalizing clear cuts, et cetera. And I got in a big fight with this guy who was not a Forest Service person. He was just another person who came to the meet and greet. Fight. It's not a fight. It was an argument. And we were arguing about clear cutting. I'm saying it's bad. He's saying it's good. The guy owned a drive-in theater. I spent like 2 hours arguing with this guy. And then when I got home, I realized this didn't matter at all. It didn't matter if I convinced him or if he convinced me, because neither one of us are decision makers.
Right.
I just wasted 2 hours. So if I start to have a conversation that starts to go south in one of those situations, just change the subject. And that's another thing. I remember reading a long time ago, it takes someone 10 years to change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
I was very strongly against, however you want to say it, against a woman's right to choose an abortion, and against abortion. He was, you know, well, you, whatever language you want to use. And then about 10 years later, he found himself arguing very strongly the other side, and he had never actually realized he'd changed his mind. It's just
natural evolution of evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same has happened with me, that, you know, I argue very strenuously in favor of cooperation being a primary mover of evolution. I got introduced to that by reading John Livingston. And when I first read it, I thought, God, this guy's crazy. That makes no sense whatsoever. And it took me about 3 or 4 years before that transition took place. So what I'll do is I just sort of say my piece. If somebody starts to argue, like, okay, great, we'll talk about something else, and just sort of plant a seed. I just plant some seeds and that's it.
It's kind of hard when I have a channel and then they go and watch my channel, and that's what spurred it on.
Well, in that case, what I tell them is, great, you make your own channel and you can push whatever you want there.
Oh, that's great. I should say that.
Oh, God. I've said that. People write to me and say, you know, you shouldn't say this in your book and you shouldn't say that in the book and you should say this instead. I always just write back to them and say, hey, that's a great idea. Why don't you write a book?
That's fantastic. I love that.
Me a long time to get there. There were many times in between where I would curse at them, but it's like, yeah, you do your own thing. But the other thing, the other response I have to all that is, oh, this is God's will. Okay, what if I were to say to you that it's God's will, and don't worry, I'm not going to do this, but what if I said to you, what if I grabbed your kid and I took a a knife and I put it to your kid's throat and I said, you know, it's God's will that I kill your kid.
People would think you are freaking nuts. You are crazy.
Exactly. And they would stop you.
Mm-hmm. But they're doing the same thing to the planet.
Exactly.
And there's a knife up against the throat of the planet and they're saying it's God's will.
It's not God's will. It's actually the result of choices. And that's the real point.
They're not taking responsibility for it. Instead, religion is an excuse to not take responsibility for it.
Exactly.
It bothers me a lot. I stay up. I can't sleep at night because of that thought.
There are plenty of people who give non-religious arguments that are basically the same. They will say, you know, humans evolved so that because the earth really wanted to die. I actually get that one.
Oh, really? That's insane.
Oh, I know.
Absolutely. We're going to take some questions really soon here, just so you know. I really wanted to get through so much more, but I know I can have you on again, right?
Yeah. We'll do it again. Because we haven't even started we barely touched the whole solar wind thing. We haven't talked about bat or bird kills. We haven't talked about the fact that dams actually produce more greenhouse
methane. Yeah, methane, right? Because of the decomposing material when they dam it up and everything, yep. Right?
Yep. So it's actually, they call them methane bombs or methane factories because it's actually worse. Dams are actually worse. Even ignoring the fact that dams kill rivers, just from a greenhouse gas perspective, dams are actually worse than coal. I'm not arguing for coal. Oh, no. Take questions. I want to just say quickly. So some of my solutions. So first off, we need to recognize that the earth is primary. And that it is more important than the economy. And there are more people on the planet than the planet can support. I could reduce population with a non-draconian fashion really easily, which is give women absolute reproductive freedom.
Yes. You know what? I have my own story on that, and I tell it all the time. I tell it often about how I wasn't allowed to have my tubes tied when I was 23. And they wouldn't do it until I had 3 children. And I never wanted children. If I would have had that opportunity, and I think they should actually incentivize you not to reproduce at this point. But, you know, that would be huge. Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. This is really important to me. It's like heartfelt. It hurts me to think about it. But go ahead.
50% of the children who are born right now are not actively wanted in the world.
Yeah.
And so we could solve overpopulation really easily. Just give women absolute reproductive freedom. All we have to do with that to stop that is A, get rid of the monotheistic Abrahamic religions and patriarchy and also the capitalist growth imperative. No problem.
We could do that simple, right? That's super easy to do.
That's one thing. Another is that, as I said earlier, capitalism is run on subsidies. And
right. We're giving subsidies to the wrong places, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, if they made me, I mean, I recognize industrial civilization can never be sustainable. But if they made me dictator, I wouldn't say, okay, let's get rid of all cars tomorrow. What I would do is have a gradual descent where we take, for example, right now, the world's commercial fisheries are subsidized to a greater value than their catch. So basically, people are being paid to destroy the oceans. So just pay these people to stay at home in their underwear and watch The Price is Right. You know, but the world would be better off.
It would be absolutely paying people to stay home. And they're also subsidizing all the oil companies and all the monoculture farming and all of that. They're getting subsidies while the people that are doing the good things are not getting subsidies.
So just take subsidies from, for example, the military and put them toward repairing riparian zones, removing dams or reforestation. So that's the first thing. But the other thing that I want to say is, yes, it is a climate emergency. And yes, carbon emissions have to be reduced by 80% immediately. So here's a whole nother thing. So we could go into a whole show about this too.
Oh God, I know.
They talk about recycling being going to save the world, how we can just recycle all the metals. The problem is that the growth economy is continuing. And as long as you have an economy growing, you can't have I mean, let's forget all the problems with metals recycling. There are problems with it. We're going to leave those aside for a day because we don't have time. But as long as you have a growth economy, you're going to need more new mines. So the truth is that the economy has to contract. And if they made me in charge of the economy, I would get rid of easy things first. Oh, like right now, a very small thing is that in Massachusetts, they are trying to pass a law that says that there will be no more logging on state park lands or state lands. And one of the reasons they're doing that, there's many reasons they're doing it, that's great. There are some environmental organizations who are opposing it because that will harm some meadow nesting birds. And they want to cut down forests to make more habitat for those birds. So great, I think the birds need more habitat, but don't take it out of the forest. Convert a parking lot to a meadow.
Yeah, or convert parking lots to growing food. I mean, there's so many things. Quit allowing lawns. Stop allowing lawns. Lawns are a ridiculous waste of space. Exactly.
So the point I want to really get to is...
Okay, then we'll have some questions just so you know that I'm starting to get some questions rolling in, and I really want to get to them as
okay.
well. But go ahead. Yeah.
Two minutes real quickly. That
okay, cool.
I do actually have some solutions to carbon sequestration.
Okay.
Seagrass sequesters lots of carbon. Restoring grasslands sequesters lots of carbon. Okay, first off, reduce carbon emissions. Yes, obviously yes. We have to do that. And second, restore forests. Forests sequester lots of carbon. Grasslands, tons of carbon. Mangrove swamps, lots of carbon. Wetlands,
yeah, which also filters our water. It's the largest entity that filters our water naturally. So
basically, stop destroying the planet. The way to stop destroying the planet is to stop destroying the planet.
Simple as that.
Simple as that, actually. But the problem is you can't do it and maintain an industrial economy that is – you cannot have an economy that consumes the planet and a planet.
You can't continue to grow the population of humans that take habitat from everything else.
No, you can't. I mean, this way of life is based on stealing from everyone. You know, humans lived where I live now for at least 12,500 years. And the population was actually kind of high in this county. I think the population now is about 30,000 in this county, 40,000 maybe. And I think the population prior to conquest was about 15,000. So it's not like everybody had to starve to death. They did this because there was so much salmon. And this was actually a pretty easy place to live because of the salmon and the lamprey. And there were other places with a much lower population density. The Great Plains had a very low population density, for example. Mm-hmm.
But the more food available, the greater the population becomes.
So
thing, right?
So the point is that they did this. They lived here without destroying the planet. Did they have automobiles? No. Did they have refrigerators? No. Did they have lots of food? Yes. And so what we need to do, long story short, make the planet primary. And then everything else after that is technical.
Everything will fall into place if that becomes our lifeline, if we decide that is what gives us life instead of some magical sky daddy that maybe will take the planet seriously and take care of the planet.
And then we'll make, here's the thing too, is so many people say, you know, Indians affected their land base too. It's like, that's true, but you make different land use decisions if you're planning on living in place for the next 500 years.
Right.
So make land use decisions as though, if you're planning on living there for the next 500 years, you're not going to dig up a mountain to make copper.
Right.
And you're not going to toxify, you know, make water that's so toxic that if you fall in it, you're dead. That's just stupid.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. I could just talk to you forever. You know that. I appreciate you so much. Let's get to some questions because this show is all about giving the other people a voice and a chance to ask people questions that they can't talk to. Although they probably want to. So, going to get to the questions really fast. Oswald Spangler. Is Derek familiar with Pentti Linkola? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. The Finnish fascist ecologist. And if so, does he think that eco-fascism could be in danger of ensnaring the climate movement in Europe?
No, I'm not particularly I've heard of the guy, but I don't know much about him. And I don't think that ecofascism is in danger of ensnaring the climate movement in Europe, because I think the capitalism controls the
capitalism controls everything at this moment.
It controls pretty much everything.
Yeah, all the money involved for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Ah, no, don't go away. Question. Let me make sure I have the right question. Okay, as Shiva, mainstream scientists are telling governments of the world that people of Earth must stop all greenhouse gas emissions by the end of 2030. Do you envision this happening?
Maybe. Do I envision it happening voluntarily? No.
Right.
I completely agree that greenhouse gas emissions. See, that's one of the things that bugs me, is that there's even a controversy about this. I got a degree in physics in 83, and then when I was a junior, so 82, I took a class on solar heating and cooling, and we talked extensively about global warming. You know, this was not a controversy back then in the scientific community.
And right.
You can see people back in the 50s who are very clear on this, and we've understood the mechanism since the 19th century at least. And it's just part of my problem, honestly, is that I despair of human sentience. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah, I know that we can make some really cool gadgets like these computers. But it's not a human problem. It's a cultural problem. But I think we have sold our souls to the machines, and we actually serve the machines instead of the machines serving us.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the thing.
We sold ourselves to the culture. Like,
yeah,
that's more important than what gives us life is the culture.
And so yes, I agree. Carbon emissions need to be stopped as soon as possible. And we're talking about life on the planet, so carbon emissions need to be stopped, really. I mean, here's how I think about it. Two ways to think about it. One is, if the space aliens came down from outer space and they were doing what capitalism was doing to the planet, we would know what to do. We would, right. Oh gosh, if they power their machines by solar instead of diesel, everything will be fine. We would stop them. And the other way to look at this is, if you weren't one of the beneficiaries, you and I and everybody listening to this weren't primary beneficiaries of this way of life. If we were, for example, Delta smelt or blue whales or coho salmon or Pacific lampreys or redwood trees, and we could take on human manifestation, how would we act? Do you think desert tortoises would say, great, let's put in solar panels in the desert? No, they wouldn't.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the problem. Okay, sorry, Derek, I don't mean to interrupt. I really don't. But one of the comments I get on my channels when I'm talking about preserving habitats and all that and cutting population of humans, the biggest comment I get that just drives me nuts is that there's plenty of habitat out there plenty of land that's uninhabited is what they say. And I'm sorry, but there never was and never will be uninhabited land, livable uninhabited land. That's never happened. I mean, it may be inhabited by something that's not human, but it is definitely inhabited.
Yes. And there is no surplus in nature. That right. every salmon that you or I eat is a salmon that a bear can't eat. Right. And that an eagle can't eat, and that won't reproduce. And I'm not saying we shouldn't eat. I'm just saying don't pretend that if you cut down a forest and turn it into pellets and send them to the UK to be burned, don't pretend that that didn't harm anybody.
Right. Okay, another question. Yeah, I agree 100%, and I think people need to think about that. Chris Foster, hi Chris, all the way from over the pond. Does Derek think the system has to collapse before these changes can take place? And if so, what will replace it?
Yes, I think that this, I would love it. Every cell in my body wants for us to have a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living. Every cell in my body wants for, and we could do that if we weren't collectively crazy. But yes. It's not going to happen. And so, yes, it will take the collapse of the system for us to change. And then it will take a long time after that. It's as someone says, things are going to get worse before they get worse. This is one reason why I am so strong in defense of women in all of my talks, because when patriarchal civic society collapses, men often take it out on women. And the time for women to learn self-defense and the time for men to make their loyalty to women absolute is now. It's not after collapse. I mean, I think sort of a Mad Max world is probably somewhat what we're going to get for a while. And I'm not, I don't look forward to that. I'm not saying that at all.
No, who wants that? I mean, we're so comfy, you know.
I wish, again, we would have a voluntary transformation.
Mm-hmm. Me too. But I'm trying to convince people of that, but it's not working.
It's happening. And
was World War III considered a voluntary change of the system? That's from Book Hermit.
Sorry?
Yeah, no, I mean, and people say that you need a World War III type of response to what's going on, right? You know, and
I agree
with the environment. Yeah.
If we devoted all of our energy to reforestation, then I would not be as pessimistic as I am.
Yeah, me too. As Shiva says, we need women to lead the world and nourish again. Well, like mothers, like you always talk about mothers being very protective and being attacked by mothers of every different types of animals, you know, and I think that's true to an extent. Not that all mothers are perfect or even care about the environment, but if we cared about the planet like we care about our children, there's a lot of caring that needs to be happening, and it's not.
And we're systematically trained. I mean, this is part of the problem with patriarchy, is that we are turned. Okay, I'm going to say something controversial here, but give me a couple sentences to explain it.
Okay.
There is a sense in which the primary victims of patriarchy are men. Okay, I'm not saying that men are the central victim. The central victim are women. The central victims are the world. Yes. But it's another definition of primary, which is first. And before you can have patriarchy, you have to have an army of men who've had their empathy destroyed in order to perpetrate patriarchy. And so not the central victims. The central victims, again, are women. The first victims have to be men, because they have to have their empathy destroyed so that they can go out and become the abusers of the next generation.
That's almost derived by culture, the culture we have where men have to be tough. And
yes. And so, again, I want to be very, very clear that it's only in that second definition that the primary victims, the real victims of this culture, are women, are non-humans, are the entire planet. But before you can do that, you've got to assemble an army. So men have to be taught to have their empathy destroyed.
Right. Bookcomer says women can cause just as much trouble as men. Silly to think otherwise. No, it's true that women can. It's just the general culture has affected men and women. I don't know. Maybe you can answer that better than I can.
Well, first off, right now, 90% of violent crime is done by males, or 90-some percent. And men are generally trained to be warriors. And so, okay, I won't if you don't want me to. Am I allowed to swear on this?
You can swear as much as you want.
Okay, so Gail Dines has this great line about how within patriarchy, men are trained to say and enact "fuck you," and women are trained and trained to enact "fuck me." So women are trained to be open and inviting. Men are trained to be tough and hard and go after. And I'm not saying that's natural. I'm not saying that's inherent. I'm not saying it's biological. I'm saying that
it's our culture.
It's the culture. It's what patriarchy does. And I'm not saying that there aren't bad women. Of course there are. Just read about a woman yesterday who, in California, who drowned two of her children. And I mean, yeah, so women commit crimes, but that's not what patriarchy is about. Anyway, back to the original point. Yes, I think it will require collapse. I wish it didn't. And I think from the natural world's perspective, the sooner that collapse happens, the better. I think that if I were a blue whale or a right whale or a American pika or a sequoia, I'd be going, can't happen. I wish it would have happened several thousand years ago. Passenger pigeons probably wish it would have happened 200 years ago. Oops, look behind me. Do you see? Oops.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Oh, my gosh. That is so freaking cool. Do you guys see that? Oh, my God. There is a bear.
Two.
What side is there? There's two. Okay. All right. The other one's kind of hidden there. Okay.
There's one in the corner of the tree, and there's another one.
That is amazing. Oh, my God. You are so lucky to see that. Every day of your life to see the bears, to walk with the bears. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Your dogs aren't going crazy yet.
They're asleep.
Oh, good. Let them sleep. Mine are sleeping too. Do you see my puppy behind me?
I can't say the B word or they will get up and start yelling.
I know what you're talking about though. Oh my gosh, they're so beautiful. I love nature. We need to save that. Save that. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I am so happy that happened while you were on with me. That makes me so like giddy inside. I mean, how much time do we have to see that kind of a thing, you know? Time is fleeting. Anyway, oh my gosh. So we're at an hour. If you have more to say, I am more than willing to let you talk because, you know, you're kind of one of my heroes. So I don't see any more questions that are addressed. Oh, wait. Human wants me to ask if anyone else has questions. Okay, last chance for a question for Derek.
Yeah, let's do like 5 more minutes and quit.
Okay, sounds good. So Daniel, Gary, you had a question earlier, and it's way too far up for me to get it. So if you want to ask it again, that would be fantastic. I don't see. Come on, guys, hurry and type. It takes a second to type. So, Sandy from Environmental Coffee has said I screenshot the best shot of this, so she got the bear in her, but the bear is still there over your shoulder. Oh my God. That is amazing to me. I think he is approving of Derek. Daniel says he didn't think of the question, but anyway, bears here too. They're everywhere, I guess. Well, that's cool. There's not bears here. I would love to see a bear in the wild. The only place I ever seen one in the wild was in Yellowstone. So, or high desert. There's not a lot of bears. There's cougars, but not a lot of bears.
I've never seen a mountain lion.
I haven't. Wild. They're shy. They're super shy. There's a ton of them up here, but I've never seen one. I've seen remnants of, I've seen their tracks. I've seen their dens, but I've never actually seen one. They're just super shy. Which makes me sick when people hunt them with the dogs and stuff. That just makes me super sad. What they ever do, you know?
That bear's trying to unlock the door there.
I know. Derek. He's keeping putting his paws up there. Did you see that video of the bear that was locked in the car and they had to let it out? Did you see that?
Yeah, that was pretty cute.
It was. How'd they get in there? Bears are smart, man.
Two years ago, I had to keep replacing my tires because there was a baby, you know what, who did like to chew on them. And after the first time I thought, oh, that's kind of cute. And then that's $60 a piece or $80 a piece for tires. That got old pretty quickly. So I had to make some nail strips basically, and then put nail strips on the outside of the car so they couldn't get at it. Okay, I see we got another question. So should I answer this one?
Yes, go ahead.
So question, what domino does Derek want to see fall first? So if I were in charge, like you said earlier about lawns, I would start with completely unnecessary things. As much as I like sports, I would get rid of retractable stadium roofs. I would get rid of golf courses. I don't like golf anyway. I would get rid of things that are completely, like you said, lawns. I would start with the stuff that's painless.
That's totally painless. How hard is it to get rid of lawns?
So, and if you want a place for your kids to play football, you can keep some grass in a park, you know? Mm-hmm. Have a community park where kids can go and run around on the regular grass if they want, the non-native grass.
Gary has his question back up, so when you're done with that one.
I would get rid of jet skis. I would get rid of off-road vehicles. So start with the easy stuff and then start moving closer and closer to home pretty quickly because it's such an emergency. But start with easy stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Do you see Daniel's question, Daniel Geary? He says, I don't know how to tag you, but I'm wondering Derek's thoughts on collapsing industrial civilization that he's expressed before. I'm not sure what he's...
Yeah, I'm not sure what the question is.
But there, did you see the report on industrial civilization, human civilization collapsing by 2050? We can just go with that.
That's not soon enough. That's not soon enough for the 200 species that went extinct today and tomorrow.
Right. The 250, I thought it was.
Yeah, it's all estimates. So what I want people to do is to find what you love and then defend it. And no matter what you love, it's under assault, whether that is free speech, honestly, or whether it is women's rights, or whether it is specific places or specific wild species or whatever it is. You know, that's the thing, is when I talk about bringing down civilization, that's really desperation speaking, because if we had enough people, the big distinction is not between those who want to bring it all down and those who don't. The big distinction is between those who get off their butt and do something and those who don't. And which doing something can include this. It can include propaganda. It can include you doing your show. That's doing something.
And I hope so. It takes a lot of time, and I'm trying to get word out and try to make people educated a little bit.
So what I really want for people to do is something.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I want you to also ask the land what it needs. If you ask the land what it needs, it will tell you. Just ask and sit with it, and then you'll have an answer, and then do it.
Yeah, nature is very good at communicating to you if you just go and sit with it and listen. I think that's my only peace, my only quiet, my only sanctuary is sitting with nature or with my horses or with my puppies.
Right.
And right now I'm their sanctuary because they're afraid of booms. Oh, well. But Dean, thank you so much, Derek. I don't see, I always find questions later, but I am going to have Derek on again. There's so much more to talk about, and I really, really can't wait to do that. I mean, it's never soon enough for me. It's hard to get our schedules together, but when we can, we will. This worked out great because this is how I want to be celebrating Independence Day.
That's great.
So
Independence Day should be independence from the corporate state.
Yes. Perfect. Rating well said.
From this culture.
Yes, absolutely. So hang out for 1 second. I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. And everyone, remember, I am interviewing Jordan Sheraton on the water issues on Wednesday at 4:30 Mountain. I will, be here with Jordan Sheraton. So you all have a very good day. And thank you so much for joining us. And we're just going to run the exit real quick. Derek, and I just want to talk to you for one more second after.